Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today, I would like to begin with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 8th of July of this year. The article's title is, Think Work-Life Balance is Overrated? You're Hired. This article was written for the journal by Lindsay Ellis. Employers get brutally honest, warning applicants of long hours and few boundaries. Shopify wants a product manager who can keep up with an unrelenting pace. Solace, a healthcare marketplace, tells job seekers, if you're looking for a work-life balance, this isn't it. A job posting for a senior engineer at a software company, Rilla, urges applicants, please don't join unless they are eager to work 70 hours a week in person. If you think free time is overrated, this is the job market for you. Corporate job listings this summer stress long hours, a competitive business environment, and the importance of hustle. It might seem impractical to recruit applicants with a pitch that loosely translates to, this is going to hurt, but we're a long way from 2022. Americans are now facing months-long job searches and competition from laid-off workers as companies shrink headcount. Though the U.S. is still adding jobs every month, the pace of hiring now has slowed, and some of the country's largest employers are cutting back their white-collar workforces. In a tougher environment, many applicants are finding that managers are taking a harder line. They're not just reining in flexible schedules, remote work, and perks that became staples of the previously tight job market. They're now warning prospective and new employees to get ready for the grind, and they're not afraid to say it out loud. Google co-founder Sergey Brin in February told employees that 60 hours a week was the sweet spot of productivity. The federal government warned staff this year of a new performance culture insisting on excellence at every level. People are logging into more meetings after 8 p.m. than they did a year ago, new Microsoft data show. They're testing the limits of what they can ask of their employees, knowing how hungry people are to work, and knowing that they are in the driver's seat, said Lori Reed, who is president of Reston, Virginia-based recruiting firm Schechter Reed. The pendulum has now swung, and companies are in control again. Reed said the tough talk can also lower turnover since applicants are well aware of what is going to be required of them, as well as reduce the number of applications at a time when recruiters are overwhelmed by resumes. After candidates' interview at Rilla, which makes AI-powered coaching software for sales reps, they receive a culture statement that outlines several core principles. We don't have any strict work policies, but we tend to work 60 to 80 hours every week, reads one. When Will Gale, Rilla's head chief of growth, sends it to candidates, he tells them that they should read each of the 8 statements very carefully. Don't lie to yourself if you have a gut feeling that you don't agree with the culture, he says. Gale, 26, says he urges applicants to ghost the company if they aren't on board. He recently ribbed colleagues for not sleeping in the New York office, as he did for about 10 days in June. We're very clear with people who we are, said Sebastian Jimenez, Rilla's CEO, who before his honeymoon this summer had not taken a vacation in 8 years. If you align with this, and there's a lot of people who do, come apply. Rilla subsidizes employee rent in New York City if they minimize commute time by living closer to the office, Jimenez said. He added that he hopes every employee at the company becomes insanely wealthy and that workers in sales will make an average of 350 $1,000 annually. Users on a Reddit forum about hellish recruiting experiences picked apart the Solus Health ad that said work-life balance was a no-go. Some posters said they admired the company's honesty, and others said they would expect more pay for the hustle required. The company did not respond to requests for comment. If I were going to work 70 hours a week, you would have to pay me $1 million plus, said Brett Terpstra, who is a software developer in Winona, Minnesota, who has applied to about 60 jobs since April. Terpstra said he is picky when he applies. I automatically opt out of anything that seems like they don't respect a work-life balance. It's not only startups telling applicants now to expect a challenging atmosphere. McKinsey now explicitly says associates must attend meetings outside of traditional business hours or take on projects with limited to no notice. Driving lasting impact and building long-term capabilities with our clients is not easy work, language in job postings reads. Blair Cecil, who is a partner leading talent attraction at the consulting firm, said it had noticed newer hires who were caught off guard by certain realities of the job, such as working with people in different time zones. McKinsey now purposefully describes that management consulting is hard, and the difficulty spurs professional growth, she said. The reality is there is a level of rigor here, she said, adding that being honest is important because some applicants will self-select out of the process. That is good for them, and it's good for us. The next article that I would like to read for you today is also taken from the Wall Street Journal. This is from the weekend edition of July 12th and 13th. The title of this article is America's Brain Drain Could Become the World's Brain Gain. And this article was written for the journal by Christopher Mims. Other countries woo aspiring entrepreneurs amid research funding cuts and new immigration policies. The United States' dramatic research and funding cuts and changes to skilled worker immigration policies threaten one of its greatest economic advantages, people-powered innovation. The rest of the world stands to benefit. Since the end of World War II, federal funding has helped our country's companies dominate the cutting edge of computing, space exploration, and medicine, delivering an economic tailwind for the nation. It made this country a dream destination for aspiring researchers, engineers, and entrepreneurs from around the world. Now that's changing, and quickly. A March 2025 survey by the journal Nature of more than 1,600 scientists in the United States found that three-quarters have considered leaving this country. Respondents specifically cited the Trump administration's hostility to scientific research and those who practice it. Historically, three-quarters of international students who earn a PhD in this country have stayed long-term. America's ability to retain these workers, who are not just highly trained but also expensive to educate, has been one key to the country's preeminence in innovation. At stake today is our position as a worldwide beacon for brilliant minds. Francis Arnold, a 2018 Nobel Prize winner and chemical engineering professor at the California Institute of Technology, wrote to me this week following an annual meeting of scientists in Germany. There is also a potential cost to the economy writ large. One recent analysis from economists at American University found that current and proposed cuts to federal research spending could whack the United States economy. A 25% cut to public research and development spending would eventually reduce the nation's gross domestic product by 3 8% a year, they found, a drop on par with what we experienced during the Great Recession of 2007 to 9. As of May, the National Institutes of Health faced a 40% or $18 billion reduction in its budget. And in the Trump administration's tax and spending mega bill that the president signed into law on July 4th, America's leaders doubled down on slashing budgets for the country's key research funding bodies. The National Science Foundation had its budget cut by more than 50%, or about $5 billion, which will wipe out support for 78% of the early career researchers it supports, according to the agency's own estimate. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration's budget for science missions is to be cut almost in half, a loss of $3.4 billion. The list goes on, agency after agency. Michael Kratsios, science advisor to President Trump, has said that funding cuts should be a moment of clarity for the scientific community, which has delivered diminishing returns on federal investment since 1980. Political biases have displaced the vital search for truth, he said. The administration's cuts have trickled down to universities, with tens of billions in grants being canceled and new curbs placed on exactly how scientists will spend the money that they receive. The U.S. is also doubling down on policies that make it tougher for skilled immigrants to come to this country or bar them outright. There have been reductions in the number of H-1B visas handed out and changes to the optional practical training program, which allows some students to work for up to 2 years after they complete their degrees. That means fewer opportunities for skilled immigrants to stay in the U.S. Google, Amazon, and Moderna were founded by immigrants or their children, as were nearly half of all Fortune 500 companies. Many researchers and economists fear that funding cuts and immigration policy changes could keep the world's brightest minds from coming to America. Currently, only about 40% of international students who receive a degree in the United States stay over the long run. And that's not a new phenomenon, but funding cuts and skilled immigration restrictions threaten to worsen the situation, says Arnold. Many countries are eager to capitalize on the U.S.'s science and technology funding cuts. At the Nobel Laureate meeting in late June that Arnold was attending when we corresponded, representatives distributed pamphlets touting a program designed to attract researchers to Germany. The flyer highlighted that country's international and welcoming climate for both science and business. There are similar programs in Canada, the UK, and China. Nikos Papandreou, a European Union parliamentarian representing Greece, recently told me that while his governing body typically moves slowly, some members are now trying to figure out how to quickly set up and fund a program to attract U.S. researchers so that Europe can benefit from a potential brain gain. I spoke with several researchers and engineers at top universities and well-known tech companies, none eager to have their names attached to their plans, who either intend to leave the U.S. or who have already relocated. All described feelings of anguish about abandoning the United States, but felt that they had little choice. The research they were pursuing was being defunded. The nation's politics had become too threatening and polarized. The United States had made it too difficult for them to do their jobs. Some cited the challenge of just coming in and out of the country when attending international conferences. Companies that once sought to bring the world's best and brightest to the U.S. are already dodging some of the complications of U.S. immigration law by simply setting up offices wherever that talent happens to already be. It's a phenomenon that accelerated during the pandemic when many companies embraced remote work and companies became more comfortable with teams distributed across the globe. Amazon's biggest single office in the world is not in Seattle, but in Hyderabad, India, a location it opened back in 2019. In a recent Instagram post, the company played up perks once common in Silicon Valley offices: lounges, tennis table tennis, a library, even, since this is India, a cricket pitch. At this 1.8 million square foot mega complex, thousands of engineers now earn their keep without having to leave their home country or navigate the daunting U.S. system for admitting skilled immigrants. NVIDIA recently unveiled plans for a controversial new research center in Shanghai. Microsoft recently announced a new 15-acre campus in India. And Google's biggest office outside the U.S. competes for talent with Amazon in Hyderabad, India. The loss of public R&D spending and the exclusion of those who are willing to come to the U.S. to make the most of it will have ripple effects for decades to come, says Arnold, the Nobel laureate. Many of our great companies will not be able to find the science workers, the startup companies will not be created, and we will not have the people we need to teach the next generation, nor the ones we need to inform the U.S. government and the defense agencies, she said. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the Wall Street Journal, the 3rd of June. The title of this article is Making the Case to Work Part-Time. Reducing your hours can bring you closer to balance, but asking your boss can be tricky. The article was written for the journal by Rachel Feinzig. You thought you could work full-time and still have room for everything else in your life. What if you realize you can't? The number of people opting to work part-time has been climbing since the pandemic's recovery, reaching new highs in recent months. Many of us want more time for the family now, for hobbies or for side gigs. Some would take a pay cut for the privilege. First, though, we have to get up the courage to ask. Historically, work has been pretty binary, says Claudia Neimbert, the co-founder of an employee coaching company. Struggling with a lack of child care or a demanding client or a frazzled employee will often think, either I stay and I do exactly what I do, or I'm quitting my job. The thing in the middle, having a nerve-wracking conversation with the boss, hashing out a new model of compensation, sticking to boundaries, is possible, but it's hard. In reporting this column, I expected to find tidy success stories of people dialing back their hours, smoothing the friction inherent in having a job and also having a life. Instead, though, I heard about part-time requests that ended in a firm no from on high and from people who scored the setup they wanted but ultimately walked away. Shifting to part-time gave others what they needed, though, even if it wasn't perfect. Everyone agreed it was worth the ask. Mapping it out first. Georgia Dixon tried to shrink her role at an education company by looking at her job description. A resident of Leeds, England, she mapped out how she could get out her central responsibilities done in 4 days instead of five. She ticked off the extra tasks she had picked up over the years, noting which department would be a better fit to oversee them. And she came to terms with the fact that she wouldn't be in charge of it all anymore. Things were going to be done differently by someone else, and I would have to be okay with that, she says. The first time she asked, her boss said no. 6 months later, armed with positive feedback on her performance from executives around the company, she asked again. This time she received the go-ahead for a four-month trial. And after that, the setup was nixed, she said. You have to mentally prepare that it might not go just as you expect, says Dixon, who left her job last year to focus on her own human resources consultancy. Currently, she works about 4 days a week. And making the case, your days might be crunched, your responsibilities might be mounting. That doesn't mean that you should start the part-time conversation by detailing your personal exhaustion, says Catherine Valentine, whose consulting firm helps companies attract and retain female talent. Instead, lay out your past accomplishments, Valentine says, and that what you're on track to accomplish next. Explain that to deliver those wins, you want to discuss working the hours you're most productive. Ask the boss, what do you think? You're not making demands. You're starting a collaborative conversation here. If you're looking to trim your hours by 20% or less, don't assume you have to take a pay cut, she adds. Focus the conversation instead on your output, not the time you'll be putting in. Even if you're slashing your hours by half, you can still make the case you'll be more efficient working your best hours of the day. In that case, Valentine recommends asking to preserve 80% of your full-time salary with the aim of settling around 70% after negotiations. I'll be working fewer hours, yes, but I'm not going to be delivering 50% less, she suggests saying. And using your time well. More part-time opportunities for people who want them would be good for the economy as well, says Lonnie Golden, an economist at Penn State Abington, who studies the part-time workforce. Labor force participation would rise as more people matched into jobs that worked for them. Fewer workers would be leaving companies. So is it feasible? Probably more than your employer lets on, he says, of part-time roles. Executives often worry that if they give special arrangements to some people, everybody will want one. When Myra Orndorff first explored going part-time at Capital One, she says a boss suggested the move would bump her down a pay grade. Orndorff, a business analyst, successfully argued that her skills and the caliber of her projects would not change. She initially used her vacation time to prove the schedule could work, and then took a pay cut commensurate with her hours. She started tracking exactly how she spent her time, blocking off chunks on her calendar for specific tasks. That helped her make promises to colleagues she could keep for her into her new hours. She would add 20% to her estimates, anticipating that some step of the project would go sideways. If someone set a deadline that didn't work with her hours, she would explain that she was part-time. She could accommodate the ask if it was important, but otherwise, here was when she could get it to them. It worked every time, she says. She loved the idea that her career was like a faucet she could adjust, depending on the state of her life. But after several part-time stretches over 5 years, the mom of four still felt like work was absorbing too much of her energy. No matter how hard I tried, I just always felt like I was putting job at number one, said Orndorff, who lives near Fredericksburg, Virginia. So she left the company in March to focus instead on her children. Colin Bach of Winnipeg, Canada, has been working 4 days a week since presenting his bosses with a written proposal 15 years ago. Bach, an engineer for a company that makes bikes for people with disabilities, laid out his 3-year vision for his role, showing that he was dedicated to staying with the company long term. He suggested an immediate 15% pay cut, but requested a 10% raise down the line, citing market data and his own good work. Reducing his hours did not stunt his career progression, says Bach, who now is an engineering leader at the company. His weekly hours have crept up closer to 40 in recent years. He figures it's better than the 60-hour weeks many full-time professionals do put in. On Friday mornings, in his first foggy moments after waking up, he remembers his weekend has begun, and he breaks into a big smile. And next, an article in the Arizona Republic from July 13th tells us Arizona's job market seems to be souring. Don't look now, but Arizona is nearly bringing up the rear for job growth. The state finds itself in the unusual position of lagging most of the nation in this important category, as well as neighboring states. Arizona in recent decades had been an expansion economy, creating thousands of jobs and luring thousands more people. Our labor force here grew about 1.7 million in early 2020 to 3.3 million at the end of 2019, a 96% increase according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics data. In this new weakness, though, a temporary blip or signs of more chronic problems? Some recent measures have masked this scenario. For example, the state's unemployment rate at 4.1% in May was below the United States average of 4.2%. And some big profile projects will become employment magnets for decades to come. But there have been some warning signs too, including a noticeable uptick in layoffs this year. The state's jobless rate is up from 3.4% in May 2024. This does bring us to the end of the time that we have for our program on careers for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening in. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.